أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم مصطفى محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم محمد فرجهم وأهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين روحي وارواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي. Before I begin today, I would like to say it's an honor to be here. I salute all of the students and the teachers who are helping to keep the message of Imam Hussein alive here in this city. You should know that you are the front lines of Islam. You are the soldiers of Islam, the soldiers of Imam Mahdi, and inshallah, you will be the generation that gets a chance, the honor of preparing the grounds for the arrival of the Imam, and then after that, seeing and benefiting and serving. And a few of us, inshallah, even have the honor of being martyred in his way, inshallah. So I congratulate all of you, and I hope that, inshallah, the brothers, both the participants and the teachers, they continue to find energy from within themselves to keep up the cause and to keep teaching and preaching and spreading the cause of the Ahlul Bayt. The topic that I'd like to talk about today is the topic of confidence and how I can develop confidence based on my beliefs in Islam. What the Ahlul Bayt have said, what the Quran says, the hadith, ayat, so that I can be a very confident person. I'll give you an example of confidence and we'll see where we're trying to go. There's a story that all of us have heard about Amirul Mu'mineen facing a man who was the champion of the unbelievers, a man named Amr bin Abdiwud. What happened was the Muslims were fighting the largest army known to Mecca at that time. The Quraysh had gathered an army of 10,000 people. They marched on the Muslims. They surrounded their city, and the Muslims, in order to save themselves, they knew they wouldn't be able to fight a battle out in the field, so they used strategy and they dug a trench, and the trench kept the enemy on the outside, the Muslims on the inside, and they were going to wait it out. However, there was a small place in the trench where the enemy could cross over, meaning the trench was dug wide enough so nobody could get over it, but there was one place that was a little bit narrow. People had made a mistake, or it was on purpose, and the enemy saw that, and several of the champions of the enemy went over, charged their horses towards that trench, and jumped onto the other side. One of these people was a man named Amr bin Abdiwud. And he was reckoned as being equal to 1,000 people. He was a champion, he was known, people were afraid of him. And they said that previously, in his younger days, he had fought off 100 robbers by himself holding a camel as a shield, a baby camel as a shield. So we're talking about a real monster. So this guy jumps across the trench, and now he's on the other side of the trench, and then there's only 5 of them. The Muslims were terrified of this person. And then what he did to even make it worse is he started challenging the Muslims to come and fight him one-on-one. He said that, come, one of you come, and you send me to hell, or I'll send you to paradise. You want to be a martyr? Come on. And the Muslims were terrified. So the Prophet of Allah turned to the believers, and he said, who's here to take this dog out? Amirul Mu'mineen stood up. The Prophet said, no, he wanted to see the other Mu'mineen. Everybody else sitting quietly, nobody wants to say anything. Again, the Prophet asks, Amirul Mu'mineen, he says, no. Finally, the third time, the Prophet let him rise. He put his turban on him, and he said that now all of truth, all of iman, is going to face all of kufr. But the prophet asked him a question before the battle began. He said that, you know who that is? That's Amr bin Abdi Wud. And Amir al-Mu'mineen said that, I'm Ali ibn Abi Talib. And then he went. Right? See the confidence. So he goes over. And in the battle, once the battle starts, Amr bin Abdi Wud, he sees Amir al-Mu'mineen coming. And he had seen Amir al-Mu'mineen in the other battle. So he knew who he was. Amir al-Mu'mineen said that, look, I've heard that you promised that if somebody gives you three options, you'll accept one of them. He said, so I'll give you three options. He said, one is that you go back to where you came from, leave. Whatever happens between us and Quraysh is our business. The guy said, I didn't come all the way over here to leave. And if I go, then people will start, the women will start talking about I'm a coward. So I'm not doing that. He said, the other thing is that you accept Islam. I didn't come all the way over here to accept Islam. He said, the last thing is, come off of your horse and you fight me on foot because I'm on foot. The fight began. Amir al-Mu'mineen killed this man. After that, he chased the other enemies and ran them out of there. The point I was trying to get was about the confidence of Amir al-Mu'mineen. That when he was opposed by this enemy, man known as a champion, instead of saying that, oh, he's Amr bin Abdi Wud, he's so powerful, he's so strong, he's like, no, I'm Ali ibn Abi Talib, bring it on. The confidence. So what we want to do, though, is we want to find out how to get this confidence based on our beliefs. How do I become confident, strong, inner strength based on my belief? Ideological bravery. Because what happens is you have a lot of people who act confident, who walk and talk like they're really tough, but it's not always bravery, which is based on belief. I'll give you an example. Once, my uncle saw a car crash in America, a car crash. So two cars come over to one another. And when the cars crash into one another, both drivers get out. One of the guys is a little guy like me, and the other guy, you've seen Americans who play football? You know American football, you know, these ogres. He gets out of the car. The big guy gets out, and the little guy is on the other side. So the big guy comes walking to the little guy to beat the crap out of the little guy. And then the little guy, as he comes closer, he's wearing flip-flops. So he kicks off his flip-flops. He gets down to a kung fu stance. He says, ah! And the big guy sees that, turns, and he runs back, gets into his car, and goes. Why? Because his bravery was not based on his ideology. It was based on the strength of his muscles. You take that away, I think this guy knows kung fu, then I will be pretty scared of this guy. So what we're looking for is ideological bravery based on iman, based on belief in God, that doesn't fail under any circumstances. How can I get that? One of the things that we have to do, now we're going to go to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt to find that and then apply this characteristic to ourselves, we'll use it for our own spirituality, for practicing Islam, for not apologizing for being a Muslim, for not backing down, not changing our name, not surrendering or compromising our principles, but to be a brave Muslim soldier of the Mahdi, the front lines of Islam, even when I'm here in the West. So one of the first instructions that we get from the Ahlul Bayt is that in order to be brave, I've got to cut sin out of my life. I can't be sinning and violating Allah's laws because it's explained to us in the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt that a man asked Imam Hassan alayhi salatu wasalam, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. He said, what is cowardice? The man asked for a description of what cowardice was and bravery. Cowardice. So he said that cowardice is that you are brave when it comes to your friends, but then when it comes to your enemies, you back down, you run away, you're a coward. So when it comes to other Muslims, right, you're all in their face, you know, oh, who are you? But then when it comes to the enemies of Islam, Israel, for instance, then you're silent. So that's it. So now, question, who is my biggest friend My biggest friend, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. My enemy is shaitan. So if I'm brave when it comes to Allah, when Allah says to get up to make Salatul Fajr, I'm like, Allah, you stuff it. I'm going to do what I... Because if I'm not praying, I'm violating Allah's laws. I'm brave when it comes to Allah, who's my friend. But then when it comes to my enemy, shaitan, he's like, come, let's do this particular bad deed. Let's look at this thing. I'm like, okay, shaitan. So I obey. I'm not brave when it comes to Allah. I'm brave when it comes to Allah, but when it comes to shaitan, I should be strong. I'm not. So the first thing I have to do is I have to cut out sin, haram, from my life. So what happens is that sometimes it's difficult to cut sin out of my life. It's not easy. It's easy to say, I can be on the member, I can start shouting. But for me personally, in my personal life, do I obey the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt? Am I living like the way Amirul Mu'mineen wants me to live? Sometimes it's difficult. So a man came to Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, and he asked him, he said, I commit sin all the time. I love sin. I find it very difficult to leave and to abandon that. So can you give me some advice? Oh, Imam, can you tell me how I can get sin out of my life? For instance, for us now, because we say we want to be brave, how can I get sin out of my life? I'm addicted to it. I like it. I enjoy it. So, Imam said that if there's five things that you do, you can do as much sin as you like. Five things? Yes, five things. You do them, you'll be able to commit as much sin as you like. You can violate Allah's laws day and night. What are those five things? The first of those things is that don't eat from Allah's provision. Live here on the earth, but Allah doesn't supply you with food. Allah doesn't give you your rizq, your money. You do it on your own. You have your own God. That's the first thing. Secondly, he said, go out of the wilayat of Allah. Leave Allah's protection. Go somewhere else, your own place. Not there where Allah rules, your own place. He said, third, what you do is go somewhere where Allah can't see you. So you go to that specific place, and it's just you and Shaitan. Shaitan, are you there, buddy? Yes, I'm here. Is Allah here? No. He said, the fourth thing is that when the angel of death comes to take your soul and rip your soul out of your body, you don't let him take your soul. You do some, you know, kung fu lessons with Jet Li. When the angel of death comes to rip your soul out of you, you fight back. The last thing he said that you need to do is that when the angel of who's in charge of hell comes to throw you, as it's in some of the teachings, face down into the fire of hell, then you don't go into hell. So the man realized that I have no choice but to live a legitimate life. And if you feel there is no way out but the right way, I have no choice. It makes you creative. One quick example and we'll move on. There was a man named Kung Fu Hassan. Kung Fu Hassan, Muslim. Yeah, at least at one stage, Muslim. So, Kung Fu Hassan was a person who started practicing Kung Fu from the time he was 4 years old. And this guy was bad to the bones. This guy went to juvie, and I'm not recommending anybody go to jail or anything or live a gangster life or anything like that. That's terrible. It's a waste. You know, you're a soldier, Imam Mahdi, you have a lot of things to do. But this guy, anyhow, while he was in juvie, what these guys would do is, for fun, he would start fighting with the cops over there, the wardens. So he's like, let's say, 16, and the fight starts with the cops. It would take 17 cops to bring this guy down. They would put him in a straitjacket. So anyhow, make a long story short, Kung Fu Hassan had a kung fu class. And in his kung fu class, one of the things he would do is he would bring gangsters off the street to come and fight with the people. That was how you would train. So
one of the people had heard all of these legends, and there are a lot of legends about Kung Fu Hassan. So he was like, Kung Fu Hassan doesn't even exist. This is all made up. There's nobody as tough as this guy you're describing. So he walked into the class and he challenged Kung Fu Hassan to a fight. And why did he do that? So the fight started. When the fight started, Kung Fu Hassan would fight with you based on the amount that he had taught you. So he starts fighting the guy. He beats the guy, obviously. And the guy thinks, now how can I get out of this? So he tries to tap out. But that doesn't work with Kung Fu Hassan. Kung Fu Hassan is there, and he is choking this guy out. And he said, you got to get me off you. So the guy realizes, you know, I'm tapping out. It's over, Kung Fu Hassan. I've had enough. You got to get me off. So he finds, because there's no other way, he finds the strength from within to get Kung Fu Hassan off of him. So, if I feel there is no way but obeying the Sharia, my mind will become very creative and I'll find ways of obeying God. So, the first point was that. The next one that I'm going to do in order to get this ideological bravery, because that was the first step. I want to be like Amir al-Mu'mineen. I want to live this courageous life, be a victor. That's the first step. The second step is that I've got to rely on God. What I'm going to do is I'm going to tap into my beliefs. There's a verse of Quran, and we're going to use this verse to strengthen ourselves. The verse of Quran goes like this: لَنْ يُصِيبَنَا إِلَّا مَا كَتَبَ اللَّهُ لَنَا. Nothing's going to happen to us except that which Allah has already decreed, what He's already written. Now, there's a question that comes to mind. If you say this, Allah's already decided everything, or Allah already knows what's going to happen, does that mean I'm compelled in my actions? Whatever I do, then I'm forced? Because Allah already knows what's going to happen before that? No, it doesn't mean that. You have free will, and Allah knows what you're going to do with your free will from forever. He always knew what you were going to do with your free will. So one example, and then into the ayah. Imagine that you and I are standing on a building. You and I are standing on a building, and there's a one-way street beneath us, and I see one car coming at 120 miles an hour down this way, another car coming 120 miles an hour down this way. It's a one-way street, and then I turn to you on the top of the building, and I say, brother, these cars are about to crash. Did my knowledge, because I knew this was going to happen, did my knowledge create the crash? Huh? No. I'm just telling you. Allah knows what you're going to do with your own free will. But now, if you know that it's already been decided and that what Allah wants you to do is to do your responsibility in the situation, since it's already been decided, you might as well be brave. Why be scared? I'll give you one example. I went to Syria. And when I went to Syria, then because of my complexion, the people thought that I was an Arab. So I go over, and my brother's at the other side, so I go with my passport. I'm trying to get through the airport, and they're like, where are you from? I'm from America. No, you're not. You're an Arab. No, I'm... So they start calling, no, you have to wait here. And there were several people who they rejected, and they kept waiting in the airport. So with these people who they kept waiting in the airport, one of the people who was with us was this little Sayyid from, I think, Bahrain. So everybody's, I mean, you get slightly nervous. They're calling the State Department to verify who you are. Maybe they'll just kick you back out of the country. You'd like to see your brother, right? So everybody, slightly inside, you have a little bit of nervousness. But for the one little Sayyid from Bahrain, he was just rolling back and forth talking, no, I'm not, do I look like I'm an Iraqi? I'm not, right? So what happened was, all of us got through. But if you know that it's already been decided, why be afraid? Because Allah already knows what's going to happen. So if I tap into the belief that I have, then it will help me to become brave. One example, practically, of how this is applied, and then we'll move on. A man says that I was an eyewitness in a plane that was being the presidential plane. Ayatollah Khamenei at this time was the president of Iran. And the guy who's telling the story was an eyewitness to this event. He said, we were flying in the presidential plane. And as we were flying, I looked outside the window and I saw one of the engines was on fire. So look again. It's really on fire. We're about to die. Let me go tell the president. He runs back to Ayatollah Khamenei. He was in the middle of a discussion at that time. Ayatollah Khamenei, the plane's on fire. We're about to die. So what Ayatollah Khamenei, first of all, in the middle of the story, he said, wait one second. He continued talking about his story. Then after that, he calmly walks over to the airplane, looks out of the window, looks at the plane, sees the engine is on fire, and he says, yes, the engine is on fire. So what does he do? First thing he does is he calms the pilots down. He says that the engine is on fire. Try and land the plane. These things are in Allah's hand. It's already been decided. Try and land the plane. You've got to do what your duty is. So they're trying, struggling. They get the plane down. They finally are able to land it. Alhamdulillah. They open up the door, and then he tells everybody else to leave first. Then he walks out of the plane. If it's already been decided, you might as well be brave. But you are supposed to do what your duty is. It doesn't mean that since it's already been decided, that means I should be reckless. Who cares what happened? I'll drive without a seatbelt. No. As a Muslim, your job is to do your duty. You have to protect yourself. One example from the life of Hazrat Maryam, that when Hazrat Maryam was about to deliver Hazrat Isa, then Allah tells her that there was dates on the tree. But in order for her to get the dates, Allah tells her to shake the tree. Right? She didn't tell her, just a miracle happened, just Allah just put dates in your mouth? No. You've got to do your effort. You've got to try. That's your responsibility as a Muslim. Right? But if we tap into this belief of trusting in God, knowing that it's all been written, then this will help make us strong. No reason for me to back down, apologize, give up, because it's already been decided. But my job is to be brave. The next thing, this is again from Amirul Mu'mineen. He says, if you're afraid of something and it's illogical, if you want to get out of this state, you have to throw yourself into what you're afraid of. You've got to face your illogical fears. These are instructions from Amirul Mu'mineen. You're afraid of something. It's illogical. I'm scared of being in the room at night because it's dark, for instance. Different people, everybody has, you know, their own fears, their own worries, their own concerns. If it's an illogical fear, you've got to face that. Well, I'm saying that because sometimes little kids do things that aren't logical. I'll give you this is a sad story, right? There was a group of people, and they made like a bet or a dare that let's go in a polar bear cage and feed the polar bear. You know what a polar bear is, right? A large white bear. So they made a bet. And so they go into the cage, one of the kids, I'm the bravest, so I'll go into there and I'll feed the polar bear, and the polar bear rips this guy apart. So that's not an example of a logical, that's a logical fear. If you do something stupid like that, Imam Ali said, face my fears, so I'll go on fear factor. No, face your illogical fears. I'm afraid to be a Muslim in public. I'm afraid to pray in front of my friends. I'm afraid. Right? There's a lot of Islamic things. Allah wants me to do this. If I do this, people will think I'm not cool. I'm afraid. Face those fears. So the instructions of Amirul Mu'mineen. Am I afraid? I face those fears. After that, the other instruction of the Ahlul Bayt is that when you're faced with a situation, when you're given an opportunity, take that opportunity. Sometimes the reason that we're not successful in life is because whenever we're given opportunity, we always talk ourselves out of our game, right? You guys don't play basketball, but let's say basketball. You know what basketball is, though, right? Basketball, okay. There's some people, when they get a chance to take the winning shot, the last shot, but it's all on the line, otherwise we lose, instead of taking that game-winning shot, they want to pass the ball off. I don't want to take the chance of succeeding because maybe I'll fail. So these people keep themselves back from Allah's best because they're afraid to take the chance to succeed, so they always settle for being mediocre. I always play it safe. I never take a chance. I never live on the edge. Whereas if you want to be successful, you want to achieve, you want to be brave, you've got to sometimes take a calculated risk. You do your part, you do the instructions of the Ahlul Bayt, you prepare, you plan. But then after that, with trust in Allah, you take that opportunity. Don't turn opportunity down. Yes, sometimes you may fail, but by addressing your fears, you'll be able to be successful. So the hadith goes like this, that there are two types of businessmen. The hadith. There's two types of businessmen. There's the daring businessman, And there's the cowardly businessman. The cowardly businessman, I can't take a chance. Maybe if I open up a business because of the recession, then everything will... Right? That person, it says in the hadith, is mahroom. They're denied. But the person who will take a calculated chance, who will make some effort, who will say that I trust that God's going to help me, God defends the believers, that's what we have in the ayat of Quran, this person will be able to be successful. So now, because our time has run a little bit long, we'll end with that. Inshallah, we'd like to make a dua though. إلهي بفاطمة وأبيها وبعلها وبنيها والسر المستودع فيها فأجبنا يا الله يا الله يا الله. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad that He makes us all the true soldiers of Imam Mahdi. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad that He makes us brave about practicing Islam. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad that He protect all of the believers, because we're in Akhir al-Zaman now. It's difficult to remain on the path of the Ahlul Bayt. We ask that Allah protect all of the believers. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad that He protect all of the maraja and especially the leader. Salawat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
Okay, now we're going to have a short question and answer session. Is there anyone who would like to ask a question?
Got a lot of hands raised over here.
A lot of the youngsters there. I guess I don't know if you want to...
I think no? this brother wants to ask a question. I guess not. Bismillah. Yes. That's what they called him. And if you were there, you should call him Kung Fu Hassan too.
Okay. Can the sisters hear, Kasa?
Oh, there's sisters here too?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Is anyone from the sisters who would like to ask a question? Oh, okay. I think there is another brother there.
Bismillah. Okay. Well, what happens is that your parents have rights over you. Your parents have rights over you. And if you want to be a soldier of Imam Mahdi, you have to make sure to fulfill your parents' rights.
Sorry, Milan, could you repeat the question?
Let me repeat the question. So the question is this, that let's say my mom passes away and my mom has qadha prayers. I know that for my dad, I try and make up the prayers. What do I do for my mom? Basically, the question is that. Okay. So, we'll start off with this, that basically, we want to remember that as Muslims, we're different from people who are non-Muslims. Allah has specific rights for our parents. We don't disrespect our parents. We don't call our parents by their first name. Hey, John, how's it going? We don't do that. Right? Islamically, we have respect for our father and our mother. We have in the hadith of who you should be kinder to, because obviously you have to respect your dad, but when it comes to being kind and sweet, a man came to the Prophet of Allah, he said, who should I be kind to? The Prophet said, your mother. He said, who should I be kind to? Your mother. Then who should I be kind to? Your mother. Then who? Then your father. So it doesn't mean you disrespect your father. It doesn't mean you're not nice to your father, but you want to be kind and sweet and gentle and friendly and respectful to your mother. One of the things that they mention in the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt is that even if your parents do something wrong to you, and inshallah your parents aren't doing anything wrong to you, but even if they do something wrong to you, am I allowed to give my look at my parents with anger, to give them the look of death? No. Islamically, I'm not allowed to look at my parents with anger, even if they do something that's wrong to them. You can explain that this is incorrect, I got my feelings hurt, right? You can explain that in a respectful way, but even when it comes to this. So your parents have a lot of rights over you. One of the rights of your parents is that you pay for their debts after they die. One of your rights to your parents after they die, they have rights while you're alive, you honor their friends. And one of the good things you can do for your parents is obviously to make up their prayers, even if it's your mother, for instance, or your father, you can make up their prayers. And also do good deeds on their behalf. Like if you have recommended acts, mustahab things, you can do them, make the niyat that I give this, the thawab of this to my parents, you will get the reward and your parents will get the reward. So now from a practical point of view, if you can make up the salat yourself, that's great. If you can't, what you can do is you can hire somebody to make up those prayers for them. But one of the rights your parents have over you is that the prayers are to be made up. We can check the fatwa of the marjas, just to look in the risala, but it should be written over there about the oldest son especially, but even the rest of the children, then you want to go and make it up. So for the fatwa itself about my parents or making up their prayers and these things, I'll look in the risala of my marja and I'll make it up. How do I make it up? I start offering the prayers which I know that they've missed. If I can't do it myself, I'm not able to do it. One of the things that I should do is I have somebody else pray for that person, meaning that they make up the prayers. If they have 10 years or a year of qadha prayers, they make up those prayers for that person, so then my parents will be safe in the grave. Bismillah. Yes. Okay. Well, for me, myself, because some of you might not know me, let me repeat the question. Okay. Let's say somebody is a Muslim, they're baligh, so now it's wajib for them to pray. You cannot leave your prayers, abandon your prayers, even if you're on an airplane. Even if you're on an airplane and it's time to make salat and your salat will become qadha, it's wajib to make salat even on the airplane. So now, I'm in a situation where I'm supposed to make salat and Allah doesn't want me to neglect my salat. There's one time when I'm at school and I have enough time to race home at the end of the day before it becomes qadha, make wudu and then make my prayer in the house. But now I want to be a brave soldier of Imam Mahdi and I want to pray right in the school. So how do I start with that? Let me tell you something about myself, and I'm not trying to talk about myself, but just because it might be relevant. I was not born a Shia. I converted to the Shia faith. I was around 14 years old. Converted to the Shia faith. So if you want to have confidence in your religion, right, we're going to try and build up to how I can get to the stage of even praying. One thing that's very important for us to do is to understand why I do the particular things that I do in my religion. If you don't know why you do what you do in your religion, somebody asks you a question, well, you're a Shia, why do you pray on that mard? Are you praying to it? You don't know the answer. You put your tail between your legs, slink away. I'm sorry, I don't know. But if you do know, you explain to everybody else, you're like that, we pray on something which, as a Muslim, I'm taught that I have to pray on something which is from the earth, right? It's from the earth. And it's not eaten or worn. So, dirt is that thing. Now, question that I have for you. Was dirt there during the time of the Prophet? Because that's what a muhr is. It's dirt. It's from the earth. It's not eaten or worn. Question I have for you. Was carpet there in the time of the Prophet of Allah? I have a question for you. I know the Prophet prayed on dirt. Why are you praying on carpet? Did the Prophet of Allah say it? Why are you asking me? I'm backing down. I'm apologizing. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I'm praying on dirt. Now, why are you sorry? The Prophet prayed on dirt. Did the Prophet pray on carpet? Okay. So now, the opposite way. But now, for all of the beliefs that I have in Islam, remember that the religion you have, there's proof for everything. You might not know the answer. Go back, ask your elders, talk to the ulama, find out what the answers are. And that knowledge gives you confidence. Because you know why you're doing what you're doing. You know there's proof from Quran and Sunnah. And if we have proof from Quran and Sunnah, we accept that because it's the word of God. Now, what I personally like to do is that if I go into a Sunni masjid, because I like praying in Sunni masjids, right? I'll go and I'll take my muhr with me I'll go behind the imam. I'll put that bad boy right down there. Allahu Akbar. Right down behind the imam. I love doing that. I welcome that. If you have a question about my faith, we'll sit, we'll talk, we'll discuss. Well, why do you do this? But it's a way of having conversation. Take out your mohr, bismillah. Mohr, what do you know? You're praying on this Torah about what? Yeah, this is the dirt from Karbala. Karbala, what happened? Sit him down. Uses it as an opportunity for tabligh. So instead of me backing down, learn about my religion. Understand my religion. Why is it that the Prophet of Allah said this? If you have questions, a lot of the questions which are going to be posed to you have already been asked by others. It's already available. It's online. Where it is in the Sunni sources, for instance. Where is it in the Sunni sources that the prayer was combined? Where is it in the Sunni sources that they prayed on the mohr? Where? Or the dirt and all these other things. Those have already been asked. Come to it from a Sunni, from the Sunni thing. Come and bring. And I'm not saying to be aggressive as in start shouting. I mean, I'm shouting now, but it's okay. I'm not. Right. When you're talking to others, though, you give them the information from their sources as to why you do what you do. So it's a simple answer, I guess, inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Welcome to Masjid Ali Education
Jazakumullah
Center.
Khairan.
On behalf of the sisters, we have a few questions from the sisters' side.
Bismillah.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
I met you yesterday as well. I came to your talk.
Okay, alhamdulillah.
I want to ask, you know, sometimes you don't want to sin, like, i.e. the whole day, you do not have intention to do any sin whatsoever. If you do a sin, i.e. due to human frailty or fallibility, is that written down by the left angel?
Okay. So let me just repeat the question so that it becomes clear. Obviously, as a Muslim, as a Shia, as a soldier, as a representative of Islam, you don't want to commit sin. You don't want to be openly committing sin, openly violating God's laws and disrespecting Allah. You don't want to do that. But sometimes, because we're weak, because we're human beings, then we slip and that sin is made. If I do that sin, is it written down? You know that there's angels following us. And they're recording what we do. Even if you make a niyat to commit a sin, then a stench, a horrible smell comes up from you. It emanates from you, and the angels can smell that even before you do it. If you do a sin, the question of the sister is, if I do a sin, I break down, I do a sin, then what happens? Does the angel write it down? Well, at first the angel waits. The angel on the right side says, no, maybe this guy's going to make tawbah. Maybe this sister's going to make tawbah. If you make tawbah quickly, great. If you don't, and then it's mentioned in the hadith, how long you have to pass, and after that the angel's like, go ahead and write it down. So, yes, if you commit sin, it's written. But now, if I've done a sin, if I've made a sin, if I've made a mistake, then what am I supposed to do? As a Muslim, my job is to fight, to resist, not to give in to shaitan, to keep struggling. So even if I commit a sin, my job is to quickly make tawbah, to turn back to Allah, to ask Allah for forgiveness. You have to make tawbah immediately. You have to intend never to go back to the sin. You can't make a niyat that, Allah, that was a wonderful sin, inshallah, tomorrow I'll do the same thing. Astaghfirullah Rabbi Atubal. No, that's not good. If you commit a sin, you have to ask Allah for forgiveness, intend not to go back, have regret. Okay, so these are the things that I have to do. But if I do commit a sin, I'm not supposed to give up on myself. Shaitan wants us to give up. That I'm such a bad Muslim, I'm such a bad person, I've done so much wrong, that's it. And Shaitan's like, welcome to the dark side, baby. Well, we're not supposed to do that, though. From an Islamic point of view, if you've made a mistake, you ask Allah to forgive you, you pick yourself back up, you dust yourself back off, and you keep on going. If you feel so bad after you commit the sin that it's just so much negative energy, I'm a bad Muslim, I'm terrible, I'm horrible, that at that stage you want to give up, then that's not from Allah, that's from Shaitan. So if I commit a sin, yes, it will be written. If I make tawbah, it will be forgiven, and it's said in the hadith. The person who makes tawbah is like the person who doesn't have any sin at all. Should we be stopping for salat?
Sorry, we just have a question in relation to the question that was asked. Is it counted as a sin when we think of the sin or when one performs the sin?
Okay. The question is that if I think of a sin, is that a sin, or is it when I write the sin, I mean, I do the sin, I commit it, that that's the sin? What they say in the hadith is that if you think about a good deed, you plan to do a good deed, they write it down for you. If you do that good deed, you get 10 times the reward. But when it comes to sin, if you're just thinking about the sin, at that stage, no, they're not writing it down. They wait until you actually do the sin. And then if you do, you only get one bad deed. I mean, one might be enough to doom us, but, you know, one bad deed. Okay, so now, but now, if I want to advance spiritually, then my job is that I cannot stop the whispers of Shaitan. He will put the idea of committing sins in my mind. But if I want to succeed spiritually, when the whispers come to me, I have to fight back and not just keep dwelling on it. If I just sit there and I'm like, oh, wow, that's a sin. Wow, that seems really interesting. That sin might even be a little bit delicious. After a while, next thing you know, I'm over there, I'm doing the sin. But as soon as the sin comes in, I start fighting back. Astaghfirullah, that's wrong. Then I can get rid of that sin. So what's best is if a sin comes to my mind, try and fight back and try and get that sin out of my mind. But if I haven't committed yet, a sin hasn't been written down for me. But preferably, even when it comes in, I fight and I make it go the opposite way, inshallah.
Okay, okay, I think we're going to...
Any advice for our small students?
Okay. Three things that we should keep in mind, inshallah, as soldiers of Imam Mahdi and as people who want to serve the cause of Imam Mahdi. One time Ayatollah Khamenei was quoted from him, he was addressing the youth. He said, when he was talking to university students, but this also applies even to our little soldiers, he says that there's three things that I want from you guys. If you're Muslims, you're soldiers of Imam Mahdi, there's three things that I want from you guys. One of them is that I want you to study well. Whatever the mu'min does, whatever the believer does, he's supposed to do well. If you're in school, the secular school, study that well. Be excellent in whatever you do. You guys are the future of Islam. When Imam Mahdi comes, he's going to want to run the world. He's going to use you and I. So study really well. Then in addition to studying really well, when it comes to your Islamic studies, which is what is going to benefit you on the last day, what they're going to ask you about in the grave, they're not going to ask you, oh, you were a millionaire doctor, or how many degrees did you have? They're going to ask you what you did with what Allah had given you. Okay, if you were a millionaire doctor, did you earn your money from halal means? Right? What they're going to ask you about in the grave is your beliefs. So you want to study that really well. So the first point was that I studied really well. The second point is that for me as a youngster, it's very important that I exercise, that I play, and that I have fun. It's very important. Playing, having fun, exercise is very important. You're a soldier of Imam Mahdi, inshallah, when the Imam returns, hopefully we'll be infantry. Huh? When the Imam returns, you're going to carry a Kalashnikov, you're going to run. So you got to be exercising, practicing, preparing. So one of those things is that for everybody, brothers and sisters, old and young, the advice of Ayatollah Khamenei is that you exercise. Everybody should be exercising. So nice halal activities. The last one, which is very important for us to start while we're young, is that we start developing our soul and purifying ourselves and removing the evil traits that we have within us. If I have a trait for cowardice, if I have a trait for jealousy, if I have a trait for being hateful, spiteful, right? All of those different evil traits, that I work on those things. So those three were the advice of Ayatollah Khamenei.
Okay, I think we're gonna stop now. Okay.